Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, this is a Monday night Martin Luther King Jr. Appreciation Edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, surprisingly. You heard the phone number. You know the email is bob@headonradio.com. I'd be interested tonight to share with others your thoughts on this Martin Luther King Day 2006. And in particular, I'm sure that, and listen, this is no demeaning of that speech, the I Have a Dream speech, but in the course of preparing over the weekend for this evening, I'm probably going to step in it. I have come to the conclusion that the white establishment in this country uses the I Have a Dream speech as a pretty cheesy way of getting around Dr. King. If all we ever remember of Dr. King is the I Have a Dream speech, then Dr. King was a failure. Do you get what I'm talking about? Already Dear Leader went somewhere today and he talked about the message of Dr. King is not complete yet. You doofus George Bush, the message of Dr. King was that creepy little power monkeys like you should never be allowed into office. And so we're not going to mess with the I Have a Dream speech. Tonight, what we're going to remember is Dr. King's speech of April 4th, 1967, at the Riverside Church in New York City. A speech that he delivered literally a year to the day before he was martyred. And yes, he was martyred. That speech at the Riverside Church, I am convinced, was the reason he had to die. That speech showed that Dr. King was moving outside the confines that had been cast for him by the power elite of a man who stands up so that people can ride anywhere they want to on a bus or go to a lunch counter or perhaps even vote. That was the role that was prescribed for Dr. King by the power elite. It was not a role that he was willing to live in. He was not willing to be confined or pigeonholed. And so when he delivered his speech on April 4th, 1967 at the Riverside Church in New York City, the responses from those in power was nothing short of terror. Time magazine said his speech sounded like a propaganda piece for the Viet Cong. The Washington Post said he has harmed his ability to help his people. Dumb bastards. They had no idea whatsoever that his people were the human people. They had no idea that white people needed help, and that he wanted to bring that help. The 1967 speech is by far and away among the most profound deliveries of oratory in American history, and far outstrips the power of the I Have a Dream speech. But you see, if we just focus on the I Have a Dream speech, then here in a couple of hundred years, Martin Luther King can be sort of a little black Santa Claus. And he can be marginalized. And his real message, just as with the perversion of the message of Yeshua by the religion industry in this country, King's message can be marginalized and made to fit whatever. Give it 50 years, and if there are any Republicans and conservatives left, I am sure that you will see. Here's to Dr. King was a confirmed capitalist. Really? Do you have a doubt whatsoever? If Southern Baptist ministers and Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and that crowd and God knows James Dobson, if they can argue that Jesus was a capitalist, then do you have any doubt that they can do the same thing to Dr. King as long as they can keep him at the back of the cultural bus? Do you have any doubt whatsoever? We have a great number of sound bites from that speech tonight. I'd like right now, perhaps to play one. Just to give you an idea of where he was going. Just hit start there, dear.
Some of us who have already begun to break the silence of the night have found that the calling to speak is often a vocation of agony. But we must speak. We must speak with all the humility that is appropriate to our limited vision. But we must speak.
That's from the early paragraphs of the speech, and the agony of those who must speak.
Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us.
Listen. Yes? We're having a little trouble. Or not. Let's take a break.
Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is, let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance. For we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close around us.
Now you will hear that again. Later in the program. It was quoted today by a great man.
But many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my path. At the heart of their concerns, this query has often loomed large and loud. Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King?
Oh, why?
Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say.
Can you imagine?
Aren't you hurting the cause of your people, they ask.
Your people.
And when I hear them, though I often understand the source of their concern, I'm nevertheless greatly saddened, for such questions mean that the inquirers have not really known me, my commitment or my calling. Indeed, their questions suggest that they do not know the world in which they live.
They do not know the world in which they live. What world would that be? How about a world where everybody is human? How about a world where the right to life extends beyond a fetus to the already born, and the already born outside the United States? Is it too much to ask? Apparently it was, because if you read the text of this speech or if you listen to it, you will understand that this speech is why it was determined that Martin Luther King had to die. Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You'd better hope and pray that you make it safe back to your own world. You'd better hope and pray that you'll wake one day in your own world. 'Cause when you sleep at night, they don't.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. I don't think that this day should be a somber day. I think this should be a day of renewal, a day of remembering the message. I've seen and participated in some conversation with regard to whether or not we learned anything from Dr. King, or whether the very presence of George W. Bush, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, God knows, the nasty, hateful bigot, Ronald Reagan, proves that Dr. King died in vain. It does not. What it proves is that there was a void left after he was killed. How many months was it after Dr. King that we lost Bobby Kennedy? Those two men in tandem could have changed America. And those two men separately begged for people to get in line and work for that change. It is neither of their faults that there were none equal to the task. It's sad, but not their fault. So, is there a lesson to be... Dr. King and others got feet on the streets, and the Vietnam War was ended in large part due to the committed concern of the American people who went out on the street at their behest. We got rid of Nixon, part and parcel of that. But the difference lies in the fact that we made a mistake that goes all the way back to a fundamental misunderstanding or non-understanding of the tenets of struggle. When we got rid of Nixon, people thought, well, you know, we've won. We hadn't. Very few people remember that a young, smarmy, greasy-headed Donald Rumsfeld was chief of staff to Gerald Ford. Very few people remember that in the, you know, those wilderness years that Dick Cheney crept off under some rock somewhere and contemplated his vicious, hateful revenge, which he is exacting on the nation now. People forget that George W. Bush slithered away and waited for Gerald Ford to offer him the ambassadorship to communist China, where, you know, he couldn't do a lot of harm. Because back then, George Bush was regarded as sort of an idiot. Just as his idiot son is now. But the mistake, you know, the mistake that we did not, that we didn't, or the mistake that we made... The advice we didn't heed is that when you've got the other side in a rout, when you have them in full retreat, you must chase them down and end their ability to be a threat ever again. We acted when Richard Nixon left office as if Richard Nixon was the problem. Richard Nixon wasn't the problem. He was a symptom. He was a particularly virulent and cancerous symptom, but he was only a symptom. The disease was allowed to burrow in, and it erupted in the form of Ronald Reagan, it erupted in the form of George H.W. Bush, and it has grown into a full-on pandemic. In human physiology, it has gone systemic with George W. Bush. The American body politic has great weeping open sores as a result of George W. Bush and as a result of the decent people, the progressives, the liberals, inability or lack of desire, or perhaps even compassion, in the face of getting rid of Richard Nixon, in refusing to get rid of those who served him. What did Dick Cheney say a couple of weeks ago, that Watergate did great disservice to the powers of the presidency? And now we hear things like unitary presidency, in which the president has almost unchecked power to do as he pleases. Now, Al Gore gave a speech today before the Constitution Society, and he made the very same argument. If the president may do anything he wishes in the name of national security, what then may he not do? Can the president walk out into the street and just shoot people? The people who believe in the unitary presidency would answer that question in the affirmative. I'm not kidding. They believe this way. And so the speech that Al Gore delivered today was resonant, and it was replete with references to things that Dr. King would have said, "Amen, brother." Al Gore sounded like the President of the United States today. And to be quite honest, Al Gore sounded like a man that I could support as a candidate for the presidency of the United States in 2 years. He was doing what... I had an email last week asking where the leaders are. Al Gore stood up and wore that mantle today. Now the question is, how long will it take the Democratic Leadership Council to form up, and the Joe Liebermans, you know, the appeasers, to form up the circular firing squad? But I've got some sound from that too today, and more than it, but you know, as ever, more than anything else, what is valid and valuable on this show is your thoughts. And so it is your thoughts I hope to have on this Martin Luther King Memorial Day. The phone number is 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Email to bob@headonradio.com. If you need a regular number, 304-658-3333. So we'll take our bottom of the hour break. Give it some thought. Your input, what do you think? And we'll come back and listen to a little Al Gore, and we'll listen to more of Dr. King. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
If you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at 3 times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Last week's Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member. Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay, he was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Well, I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sand of time. Well, I watched dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do. Yeah. I watch the world go to the dark side of the moon. After all I knew, it had to be something to do with you. I really don't mind.
Welcome back. Let's go straight to the phones. Fritz has been waiting. Hey, Fritz, your head on. Gotta turn it on. Other button, dear. There you are. Hey, Fritz.
Okay, I'm here, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm okay. I know we don't want to be too sad about this, but I think it's a sad day because, you know, the man didn't live, and I think if he were still alive, he'd be working and fighting.
I think there's a possibility, and some people might call me just absolutely crazy for saying this, Fritz. Had the man been allowed to live, I think there is every possibility he would have been president of the United States by now.
There is that possibility, Bob. You want to know why? Because the man, I think, was the greatest orator this society has ever produced. I really believe that. And this is a white man saying that about a black man.
Yeah.
You know? Black people aren't supposed to be orators. They're supposed to be basketball players, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. Well,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's how the conventional wisdom goes. But this guy had the capacity to just send chills through every fiber of your body with his words. It was amazing.
And you know, his words carried, they were freighted with wisdom, Fritz, and that's part of what blows my mind when I realize the man was 39 years old when he was gunned down by whoever killed him.
Oh, that is so sad. That's the sad part.
I mean, he wouldn't even be 80 yet.
He'd be 77, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there was one line from the I Have a Dream speech. I listened to the whole thing today, and here's the line. This is no time to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. I mean, does that say everything about what we're dealing with today?
Right. And our leaders, absolutely.
So-called leaders.
And, well, the fact that, but one thing I hope we will maybe take away today is that we are not bereft of his leadership because he is dead.
That is the truth.
His words remain, and his words resonate. And, you know, one of the things I did with this April 4th Beyond Vietnam speech, Fritz, I cut and pasted it into my word processor.
Uh-huh.
And then I just did a global search and replace. I searched for Vietnam and I replaced it with Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
The meaning didn't change.
Boy, I'll bet that came out perfect, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. Because
are you going to play some of the speeches tonight?
I've got about 30 minutes worth of that April 4th speech.
Oh, great.
And,
I'm looking forward to it. You know, I had a potential appointment tonight. And I'm staying home purposely because I want to hear as much of him as I can.
Bless your heart.
Inspiration. Thank you, Dr. King, in spirit. We love you.
Thank you, Fritz.
That's really what I wanted to say tonight.
I appreciate it. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I've got chills. Let's play a little bit more. Let's listen to this speech from April 4th, 1967.
The war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem.
Has it changed?
So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. So we watched them in brutal solidarity, burning the huts of a poor village. But we realized that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor.
Now, if you... Here's what it is. He says, I could not be silent in such cruel manipulation of the poor. And, of course, there was a draft going on then. There is no draft now. But the draft... Well, there is no formal draft. But where does the military go for its cannon fodder? Does it go to the Tony neighborhoods of the well-heeled and the well-to-do? Of course it doesn't. The military goes to the inner city schools, high schools, where they know that kids will, with any luck, graduate, and in graduating will be faced with a whole lot of nothing. And those poor are the people who are recruited to fight the wars of the rich. By the time we are done with the sound bites from this speech tonight, you will fully understand that the fight is not over. That, in fact, he is not dead, Dr. King. That his spirit yet lives as long as we give it life and breath. That when we honor him and we honor his mission and his message, that he is alive as you and me. Now that may sound a little bit over the top to some. I hope it doesn't. Do the work. Don't cry out for want of a leader. You have a leader. Time and again in this speech, this isn't about his people. God, I despise the notion, the other side has already so thoroughly succeeded in it. You know, this is a black holiday. It's a black holiday. It's kind of like Kwanzaa. No, it's not. This is a day to honor the greatest liberal in the last 40 years, in the last 50 years. Absolutely. What about John Kennedy? No, this is a greater liberal than John Kennedy. This is a liberal who had a vision to change the fundamental way that we are as Americans. Don't preach, Bob. Don't preach. Let Dr. King preach. Let's see. Let's go on a little bit more. And this is all chronological. These are in chronological order out of the speech, a little bit at a time. Here we go.
My third reason moves to an even deeper level of awareness. For it grows out of my experience in the ghettos of the North over the last 3 years. Especially the last 3 summers. as I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. I have tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent action. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, to bring about the changes it wanted. Their questions hit home, and I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. For the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence, I cannot be silent.
Will you be silent? For the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence, has anything changed? We allowed George Bush to go into Iraq on a damn lie. And millions tremble under the threat of our violence there. That, more than anything else, that is the soundbite that got Martin Luther King killed. When he said that it was that he speaks for the sake of our government, it was those entrenched in power who said, "Holy hell! That black man's got off the plantation. Well, he was out there and he was marching and he wanted people to be able to ride in the bus, but, you know, damn, he's after our war now. He'll see everything. He'll see the big board. He's after our profits now, and that cannot be tolerated." You know, did some corporation pull the trigger? Who knows? It's my understanding the King family came to the conclusion that James Earl Ray wasn't the guy. Now, look at, in the year 2006, we have a government that holds people in secret prisons and tortures them on a daily basis. We have a government that lies to us about why we need to go to war, when very seldom does a true democratic republic ever need to go to war, and never needs to go to war on an offensive basis. Would such a government, 39 years ago, would such a government kill a man who said the sorts of things that you just heard? Would they? And in so killing that man, would their motive be to shut him up and hopefully kill the movement that he began so that they could go along their merry way of slaughter and death? Would they do that? And would that movement die if it was bereft of its leader? Is the movement dead? Is it? Let's have a little bit more.
It should be incandescently clear that no one who has any concern for the integrity and life of America today can ignore the present war. If America's soul becomes totally poison, part of the autopsy must read Vietnam.
Iraq.
It can never be saved so long as it destroys the deepest hopes of men the world over. So it is that those of us who are yet determined that America will be are led down the path of protest and dissent, working for the health of our land.
Working for the health of our land. This is no this is no little sissy speech. This is an indictment. This speech is a, well, it's unfair to say it's a call to arms. It is a call to action. And it's a call to action that it wasn't just for April 4th, 1967. Later, if you go to the text of the speech, you'll find that he mentions troops in Venezuela, troops in Colombia, troops in Peru, troops in Guatemala. Those 40 years it's our fault. We did not chase down the killers when we had them on the run and make sure that they never raised their ugly heads again. I'm not talking about violence, you know what I mean. I've listened to this speech something on the order of 15, 20 times over the weekend. It's burned into my brain. And tears still come when I think about how we have failed. Look it. We failed. When Ronald Reagan was elected, that meant we failed. When George Bush the first was elected, we failed. When we watched while operatives from congressional offices across the United States descended on Dade County, Florida, to intimidate those election workers into stopping the counting of the ballots, we failed. There's a misunderstanding that what he was talking about with that when he says nonviolent action, that somehow means sitting around and singing Kumbaya. By God, it doesn't. Nonviolence does not mean pacifism. And nonviolence does not mean a willingness to just let the other side win if they decide that they're going to. Again.
This is a calling that takes me beyond national allegiances. But even if it were not present, I would yet have to live with the meaning of my commitment to the ministry of Jesus Christ. To me, the relationship of this ministry to the making of peace is so obvious that I sometimes marvel at those who ask me why I'm speaking against the war. Could it be that they do not know that the good news was meant for all men, for communists and capitalists, for their children and ours, for black and for white, for revolutionary and conservative? Have they forgotten that my ministry is in obedience to the one who loved his enemies so fully that he died for them? What then can I say to the Viet Cong, or to Castro, or to Mao as a faithful minister of this one? Can I threaten them with death, or must I not share with them my life?
Must I not share with them my life? God. Can you imagine words like that coming out of the mouth of a Falwell or a Robertson or a Dobson or that freak Kennedy and the Coral Snake Ministries in Florida? Can you? There is your dividing line. There is your dividing line. Those are the words of a follower of Christ, whose good news is to all men, as he noted. The demon-possessed religion industry, there is no good for other people in the world, only for us. What does Fred Phelps call it? Servants of the servants. Do you see how it's supposed to work? My God, it boggles my mind when I listen to a speech like this, and then all I have to do is walk into the living room and press the clicker, and there's the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Send us money, and we'll send you a prayer hanky. Or maybe it's James Dobson talking about how a misbehaving child should be beaten until they cry real tears. Now you tell me, which one is the follower of Yeshua? This man who said, I must offer them my life, because the man he follows did the same? Or a multimillionaire who calls out for the assassination of others? Which one follows the poor carpenter? It should be easy enough. And people say, why are you doing this? Why are you opposing the war? You know, that has nothing to do with your people being able to sit on a bus. I don't understand. They didn't understand now, and they then, and they don't understand now. The fact that there are Republicans at all tells you one of two things. Either they never heard Dr. King's message, or they heard it and they ignored it. Those are the only two choices. What do you think? Does that prove the hatefulness of the Republican psyche? Does it prove the malevolence of the Republican spirit? And here, let's not give out any blanket passes. How many Democrats voted in favor of the war? They don't get a pass either. Don't call yourself a Christian if you support war. At all. Easy enough, isn't it? Let's have a little more, Agnes.
We are called to speak for the weak, for the voiceless, for the victims of our nation, and for those it calls enemy. For no document from human hands can make these humans any less our brothers.
But you see, that brotherhood of man stuff, that's just liberalism. That makes conservatives sick. They hate it when they hear us talking about how we're all human. That black and white and Muslim and Jew and Christian are all non-issues. That we're all fundamentally, at the bottom level, human beings. That makes them sick. Because in their world, by virtue of being an American, you are better than the rest of the world. And you're anti-American if you don't stand up and bray that from the mountaintops. If you don't stand up at the Olympics and chant USA, 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 then somehow, you know, you're a fifth columnist. This is... find the text. Read it. Keep it handy somewhere. Go back and review it from time to time. This is the future. I'll go ahead and say this is a roadmap to the salvation of the American Republic. Al Gore earlier today took a step down that roadmap. He even echoed, as I said, the words of Dr. King. And he was a fitting one to speak the truths that we could well anticipate Dr. King would have said on a day like this. Is there anyone who thinks that Dr. King would have supported this war against this group of brown people? When you take a long, hard look at Iraq, is there any way that you come away with it with anything but a determination that this is a race war? It isn't a religious war because we just as gleefully bombed Christian civilians in Iraq as we did Muslim ones. That means it must be a race war. This is the deliberate killing in Iraq of people for being where they are when they are. We killed millions in Vietnam, and we are well on the way to doing it in Iraq and Afghanistan. Friday evening during the show, I saw the headline, CNN reporting missile strike may have killed Al-Qaeda number 2. By Saturday morning, that was all gone. Oh, missed him by this much. We didn't kill Al-Qaeda number 2, but by attacking another sovereign nation, for it was in Pakistan where we sent these missiles, by attacking another nation, yet again, unprovoked, we did manage to kill 17 civilians. 17 mothers, 17 fathers, 17 sons, 17 daughters, uncles, aunts, nieces, nephews, brothers, sisters, babies in the womb. We did that, you and me, because we allow it to happen. We permit it. Now, you might get a little upset with me for saying that, but we do. Until such time as the White House is surrounded with a million people peaceably demanding that George Bush exit the office, we're doing it. We bought those missiles. We paid for them. And they were sent into the homes of the poor. Yes, Lord, yes, they certainly were. Let's take our break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart and wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
So Dear Leader comes out today. All groundhog-like, I suppose. He was at the annual Let Freedom Ring performance at the Kennedy Center. And he said, "The reason to honor Martin Luther King is to remember his strength of character and his leadership, but also to remember the remaining work." God, I despise that man. To remember his character and his leadership. No, monkey, you got it all bass-ackward. His character and his leadership came from his commitment to human rights. And as long as ugly little pasty-faced doughy white Republicans like George Bush can talk about how he led his people and talk about civil rights for minorities, every time we let them get away with that, they kill him again. Don't you see? Every time we let them get away with that, they shove Martin Luther King back into the ghetto and they put Rosa Parks on the back of the damn bus all over again. Yeah, by the way, he called her Rosa Park again today. We recommit ourselves to working for the dream that Martin Luther King gave his life for, an America where the dignity of every person is respected, where people are judged not by the color of their skin, by the content of their character, and where the hope of a better tomorrow is in every neighborhood in this country. No, you dumbass! It is not what he gave his life for, an America where the dignity of every person, blah, 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 blah. It is a world! A world where every person has dignity. And right now, George W. Bush, you blood-fisted murderer, you deny the dignity of human beings all over this planet. And I despise you for it. The very idea that you can even say Dr. King's name and lightning bolts don't just land all around you is proof to me of a disinterested deity, if at all. The very idea that George W. Bush would pretend toward admiration of a man who opposed every living thing that George W. Bush stands for is nauseating. Him in his fine wealth. Him with his born on third thinking he hit a triple attitude. Him with his screwed up everything he ever set his hands to and winds up trying to screw up the world as his pièce de résistance. Him talking about honoring Dr. King. At the dawn of this new century, America can be proud of the progress we have made toward equality, but we all must recognize we have more to do. Yes, we do, George Bush, and if you would get out of the way, we might accomplish some of it. If you and your filthy, corporatist, Republican cronies would just get out of the way, there might be some hope for the rest of the world. Do you remember that the government wiretapped Martin Luther King? Do you remember that the government surveilled Martin Luther King because they thought he was a threat to their grand profit-driven designs? Do you remember? How many Martin Luther Kings are under surveillance by the National Security Administration even as we speak? How many? How many peace groups have been infiltrated by the FBI even as we speak? How many? The president helped honor the late Rosa Parks, who died last fall, with the John Thompson Jr. Legacy of a Dream Award. Grammy-nominated gospel artist Yolanda Adams performed with a diverse choir made up of Georgetown University students and members of the Washington community. Now, this is a principle of nonviolence. There's nothing violent in what I suggest here. But may I suggest in the future that no group of African Americans allow George Bush anywhere near a commemoration of the life of Martin Luther King Jr.? May I suggest that? Or maybe I'm just being all radical. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on, man.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
No, I'm all right. You?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm not all right. This is a really emotional day.
Yeah.
You know, like, what a wonderful man. Fritz kind of stole my thunder in the beginning, but I love him for it, man. That makes me think he thinks the same way.
Yeah. There's a lot of us who do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so poignant, I think, for today is out of the I Had a Dream speech. And Fritz kind of did the end of it. It's just one sentence. And it says, this is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. And that is so important because that's what we have to do today. We can still win. We could still fight. And Martin Luther King should be an inspiration to everybody that knows, you know, listen to what he said. And, yeah. and we have to do that.
And that gradualism.
This is the time.
You know, that gradualism of which he spoke is the gradualism that George Bush was talking about today. That, we have to do more. No, do it all now.
We can't wait. The pendulum is stuck. Okay?
Yeah. It needs kicked.
Yes, it does. And you don't do that gradually. You run up and you kick the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do. And that's what killed Martin Luther King. I agree with you 100%. When he starts standing up, you know, I Have a Dream was 63. When was he talking? 60.
This is 67. This speech.
Okay.
He had worked, and he had
a lot of people. He scared the same people that are in power today, Bob.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've pointed that out. You know, and hey, it's time to stand up. You know.
Yeah.
And it's time to stand up, and if people aren't willing to do that, then get out of the way.
For someone who will.
Exactly. And, you know, well, gradualism will not work. It's time to do it now.
Yeah. And Dr. King worked, he tried to work within the system. You know, he delivers the I Have a Dream speech in 1963. He goes through 63, 64, 65, 66, and nothing is happening. And as he noted, black American young men and white American young men are shoulder to shoulder in Vietnam, slaughtering poor people.
Let me ask you something. Well, I'm sure you're going to play it. I don't want to blow it.
No, go ahead.
I mean, okay, after Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968.
A year to the day from when he gave the speech we're working with tonight.
And is this the speech where he says, I may not get there with you? Or is that a day or so before his?
I think that's another one. Because okay. I didn't note that in this text.
Okay. All right, buddy. Great show.
Thank you.
Absolutely wonderful show. This is, I'm not a real religious guy in that, and I know a lot about the second coming, and I don't know a lot about it, but I've heard that expression a lot of times. I think these guys might have done them in again. And they don't even realize.
Well, you know, that's a discussion. Yeah, exactly. That's a discussion I had with someone else not too long back. I'm not sure, but what Jesus has been back a dozen times and we've killed him every time.
Well, exactly. And if that's so, Hell, even if he's only been back once, I think Martin Luther King would rate in the top couple, two picks there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Gandhi.
Oh, and
look, it's always the guys running around saying, be nice to each other. Would you please quit being so damn mean? Those are always the ones that get rubbed out. You know, the Republicans, the people who believe in killing without mercy, they never get touched. It's always our side.
Exactly. It's time to change that. And I think, you know, Al Gore, too, man, you know, like, hey, go, Al. Let's, you know. And we have to have people that we need rebels now. We have people that aren't afraid to die. People that are, that back Martin. It's time to stand up. It is time to stand up.
Absolutely.
So listen, before I go, to get off, life has to go on.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to send one little message. Hey, David, how about them Steelers?
I will bet you a dime to a donut he just heard that too, Wayne.
I certainly hope so.
You know, I'm a little pessimist. I didn't expect it to happen.
We're going to beat Denver.
I think so.
We're going to beat Denver. That ain't no problem. You know, the big one we might choke, but at least Jerome gets to go to Detroit if we beat Denver.
He gets to go home.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Wayne.
All right, brother. Bye.
Later. We, you know, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. Life goes on, and how about them Steelers? I tell you what, let's take a break. And when we come back, more of your phone calls if you want. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I've got a letter to read. And more of your emails if you so desire. Bob@headonradio.com. This is Head On. I am Bob Kincaid.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating. Just very devastating. And the victim's program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Whoa, way down south,
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. And I've got a letter here that was sent to us by our good friend Benedict. But before we go to it, I want to read it in its entirety because it's pretty good medicine. I want you to hear a little bit of Al Gore's speech today. He came out swinging, pulled no punches, and interestingly, it was this speech happened as a result of a bipartisan effort. Now, I generally wouldn't throw a warm bucket of spit on Bob Barr, former congressman from Georgia, if he was on fire. However, he has come out begging for someone to do something about the unchecked assault on the Constitution that is the Bush administration. And Al Gore came, like I said, he came out today swinging. This is Al Gore at the American Constitution Society.
Last week, for example, Vice President Cheney attempted to defend the administration's eavesdropping on American citizens by saying that if it had conducted this program prior to 9/11, they would have found out the names of some of the hijackers. Tragically, he apparently still does not know that the administration did, in fact, have the names of at least two of the hijackers well before 9/11 and had available to them information that could have led to the identification of most of the others. One of them was in the phone book. And yet, because of incompetence, unaccountable incompetence in the handling of this information, it was never used to protect the American people. It is often the case, again, regardless of which party might be in power, that an executive branch, beguiled by the pursuit of unchecked power, responds to its own mistakes by reflexively proposing that it be given still more power.
Pretty strong stuff, huh? Vice President Cheney, did you hear him kind of growl as if he was going to break into his Cheney? Well, if we'd only had this power before 9/11. But, of course, I've got a news story sitting right here. Bush authorized domestic spying before 9/11. From Friday, 13 January, the National Security Agency advised President Bush in early 2001 that it had been eavesdropping on Americans during the course of its work monitoring suspected terrorists and foreigners believed to have yada, 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 yada. So you did have it before 9/11, Dick. You big old nasty Darth Vader lying SOB. Like I said, we got a letter from our friend Benedict, and it's in relation to this speech. Dear Mr. Gore, as I listened to your speech of January 16, 2006, and other speeches before that, I saw clearly how much our country had lost in what Alan Dershowitz rightly termed a supreme injustice. Perhaps Bush v. Gore was but a few years back in our lives, but it seems like ages to me in our country's history as a beacon to all oppressed people. Today, as you noted, we are the oppressed. We are looked upon by our major allies in Europe and elsewhere with awe, almost dumbstruck. How could we, the bearer of democracy and the longest currently successful democracy, have come to this? Did 9/11 really change everything that much? I submit to you that, terrible as that day was, it did not. What changed everything instead was a group of zealots determined to, in any and every way, force their own ideology upon us and the world, an ideology that would remove power from its natural place with we the people and place it instead with the moneyed elite. Mr. Gore, your sense of history is impressive, as this speech and others has well demonstrated. In that, you clearly do not need to be reminded of patriots like Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, George Washington, and many others. Did they, in their own personal lives, wish to be thrust into the times they were for some personal gain? Clearly not. Most of our founders died either during our own revolution or in total poverty for their belief in a new nation and democracy as the guiding principle of that nation. They offered and often gave everything so that you and I could live the lives of privilege that we have. I have an idea. I've been given my incredible life by the sacrifices of so many, some known, some not, that have come before me. To be so gifted, I must ask myself, why did they do that? What did they want from me for bestowing upon me such a gift? I can only conclude that they wanted to give me their gift, they wanted to give their gift to me, to those who followed me. Perhaps improved, but at least in as good a form as it was given to me. In that I have failed. In that I have failed, but I will not continue that failure. I will do whatever I have to do not to continue that failure. Our founders did not request their times and events, just as you and I did not request our times and events. They are upon us. We must act because we have no choice. It is as insufficient for me to simply blog and chat spreading the message of real democracy as it is for you to simply deliver glorious speeches such as this one was and others were. Our country, our children, are at stake. I understand that the 2000 election was devastating to you. I understand why you stepped aside in 2004. But this is not either of those years, and times are not what they were in either of those. It is not about us anymore, Mr. Gore. It is about what we leave our children, all of them, every single one. Drastic times require drastic sacrifices. It may be that you do not want to run for president in 2008. It may be that you have been so frustrated by the obstacles in that process that you do not want to submit yourself to that anymore. None of that matters. Our founders gave so that we could have. Mr. Gore, you must run for president in 2008. There is simply no other person that has the integrity to do what will be then by 8 years of the destruction that you and I have witnessed during those years. You must run, not because you want to be president, but rather because you are the only one with even a chance to give our children what we were given. Run, Mr. Gore, run. I don't see any hope without you. I kind of feel that way, too. Now, I've run us up against the bottom of the hour break with that. We will come back and do phone calls after the Cup of Joe report. So stick around. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. More than 40 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King told the world of his dream of racial equality. He stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial and said in bold and powerful language that people of color were sick of being second-class citizens and that they wouldn't rest until they were truly free. So how far have we come since then? Look, let's face a simple reality here. No legislation, no matter how well written, is going to wipe away hundreds of years of bigotry. It was almost a century after Jefferson wrote that all men were created equal that Lincoln legally freed the slaves, but 100 years after that, things were still so bad that there were riots in the streets. And anyone who thinks it's ended is wrong. Sure, the racists have to be more deceptive about spreading their hate, but the hate is still there. I'm not saying things are as bad as they were in 1963, but face it, we still have a long way to go. And here's the deal. Dr. King's speech was specifically about racial inequality in the United States, but if you read between the lines, you'll see he was speaking of something greater. Because his dream wasn't just about freeing one group of people in one country, it was about freeing all of us from the darker side of our nature. When we truly start to judge a person by the nature of their character, when we stop exploiting people for profit, when we stop killing each other over land or money or oil or religion, then we can finally say that we are free at last. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering. Pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Baby boy named Martin, born one winter day. His mother, Alberta, still had strength to pray. She asked if he would always stand for what was just and fair, to be a friend of man was his mother's prayer. Martin went down to Montgomery.
Welcome back. That's John Koontz.
He went to Selma to
his mother's prayer.
Had to put things
powerful stuff.
Right.
It's coming up on 24 minutes before the hour. Let's do go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm fine. You?
Reasonably well. I don't care to lionize people of death beyond what they were in life, but I'm talking about Martin Luther King, John Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these men were great, great people who had a lot to offer, and the world has been sadly diminished by their early demise. And what can you say? You know, what would have been, what could have been.
How many months was it between Martin getting killed and Bobby getting killed, Jim?
Martin Luther King, it was just three months, I think. Kennedy was killed in June of 1968. Martin Luther King, I think, was killed in April, if I'm not mistaken. March, April time frame, maybe. Wasn't that long.
What a lick.
Yeah, 68 was a bad year for a lot of people. And, you know, it was a bad year for, particularly for people of my generation. We had Tet. We had all sorts of things that happened. And I think in my generation, we were particularly influenced by these men. And
kind of felt like the world was coming to an end, didn't it?
Hard hit by their loss. But the world did not end. And it continued to march. And the stars continued to march in their courses. And the earth continued to rotate on its axis, as it will continue to do so. Now, what I say to you is that the pendulum is not stuck. It may be slow in moving. It may not move at the speed with which we would like for it to move, but it will move with inexorable force. Now, in 2000, I was absolutely devastated when Vice President Gore had the election stolen from him,
mm-hmm.
and wrote him a letter, wrote the letter to Vice President and Mrs. Gore. And basically, I wish I could find that letter. But what I told him was, I said, you know, politics is the eternal sea that bathes many shores. And it, as it takes from one shore, it adds to another. And I wished to him in that letter that the waves of that sea would carry him and his family to a safer haven and once again bring them back to us at a better time. And when I saw him on television today, I had a small glimmer of hope that perhaps his boat may be again headed in our direction.
And, do you think he can win in 08?
I think so. Let's examine the facts. Since 2000, this country has involved itself in a war. Now, this war was not thrust upon us. We initiated it.
We created it.
That has cost us, and the people who are in Washington today are either very stupid or very dishonest. But it is costing us $2 trillion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, no other country in the world could sustain that type of economic loss or hemorrhage. And we can't sustain it for much longer.
No, we can't.
And I think that the time has come for us to realize that if we have people in Washington who are not doing the people's bidding, and they need to be sent home. In other words, throw the bums out.
And, you know, Gore said some of that today.
I don't care what party or what side of the aisle they're on. If they're not doing what they're supposed to do, they need to go.
Well, he said that today.
And it's just like, I don't know who said to the Long Parliament, go, go, in the name of God, go. You have been sitting here too long for what you have been doing. Depart, I say, and have done with you. And that's what I say to any member of this Congress who would, for example, in the Senate, vote for Alito's confirmation or to continue to pander to the wishes of George Bush and Dick Cheney and members of the Republican Party. And any member of the Democratic Party who would not stand up for what he believes and support the belief that all men are truly created equal, that any man can get a fair judgment in any court of the land, and that the rich and the well-born are not the only citizens of this country, and we cannot do this anymore. We cannot continue to exist as a bully nation. We cannot continue to bully our own people, to denigrate the dignity of labor as we have in this country. This cannot continue. And I feel that, as I said before, the sparks will come to flame. And I believe that flame has been kindled. And it's a small ember. And I think it will spread. And it will spread with amazing and even horrendous rapidity, I'm afraid. Because certain changes that have been wrought in this country, unfortunately, will not be able to be corrected in a very sterile, surgically correct manner. I'm afraid of that. But it may have come to that. We may have passed a fail-safe point there. But what I say to you is that we have a lot of responsibilities that are being thrust upon our shoulders now by incompetence and lack of fairness in the current administration. And when it gets to the point that the economy of this country collapses, and that's where we're headed. Because with the $2 trillion war, in conjunction with other things, and when we have our soldiers posted all over the globe, and when we can't even have enough people here at home in our reserve forces to take care of the problems at home, and our own armed forces has a 40% reserve component force mix, and we have, for example, the cost this war is going to generate in the future. I mean, a 30-day war in 1991 in Southwest Asia creates a $2 billion veterans bill every month.
Wow.
What will this one create?
Oh, God. I mean, if 30 days is good for $2 billion,
that's exactly what the Persian Gulf War, in which I was quite active, has taken the toll upon the Veterans Administration and the lives of people to the tune of $2 billion a month. What will this one do?
That's an ugly sober up.
Well, yeah, it is. And I'm not speaking literally generalities. I'm just citing facts and figures here.
Yeah, I understand.
However, you know, I do believe...
Would the can we pull the American people away from American Idol long enough to tell them that, Jim?
Well, I think so, because I think they're going to be thrust away from it. I mean, they're going to be pulled away from it, one way or the other. I mean, the forces of history are inexorable. And, you know, like it or not, they're going to be made to realize it. And that's what I've been talking about. It's historical inevitability, H.I., just like George and Martha, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, historical inevitability. And the historical inevitability of the period in which we live will produce an outcome which is not going to be pleasant for a lot of people, I'm afraid. And I don't see a great deal of peace and prosperity initially. But there will come a time after that, and we may have to pay such a terrible price for our mistakes that we might at least have learned a lesson.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jim, you make a heck of a lot of good points. Let's go back to Dr. King for a minute.
I want to say one other thing for you.
Yeah.
He made a statement, I believe, that any piece that is chiseled in war cannot last. And, you know, basically any type of peace like that. And, you know, history has proven that to be true. I mean, we fought war after war after war after war. And we've had peace treaty after peace treaty after peace treaty. And they've all been broken. The war to end all wars back in 1914, 1918. What did it produce? Another war.
Yeah.
How many wars have we had since World War II? I mean, you know, I don't know what it's going to take. But he did say that any peace that is chiseled or is created by the chisel of war will not stand. You were saying, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, with everything that you have said, let's go back to Dr. King for just a second while I've got you on the line. Let me get your thoughts. Agnes, would you fire up Dr. King there, please? Here we go.
The only change came from America. As we increased our troop commitments in support of governments which were singularly corrupt, inept, and without popular support, all the while the people read our leaflets and received irregular promises of peace and democracy and land reform, now they languish under our bombs and consider us not their fellow Vietnamese, the real enemy. They move sadly and apathetically as we herd them off the land of their fathers into concentration camps where minimal social needs are rarely met. They know they must move on or be destroyed by our bombs. So they go, primarily women and children and the aged. They watch as we poison their water. As we kill a million acres of their crops, they must weep as the bulldozers roll through their areas preparing to destroy the precious trees. They wandered into the hospitals with at least 20 casualties from American firepower for one Viet Cong inflicted injury. So far, we may have killed a million of them, mostly children. They wander into the towns and see thousands of the children, homeless, without clothes, running in packs on the streets like animals. They see the children degraded by our soldiers as they beg for food. They see the children selling their sisters to our soldiers, soliciting for their mothers.
Stark, isn't it, Jim?
Well, what he says basically is very true.
And it hasn't...
We went to Annam or Vietnam, and we were led there by the duplicity of Lyndon Johnson and his cohort and the industrialists that surrounded him and the military that wanted to have a war to fight because, you know, if there's no war going on, the military is like a corporation. You don't get many promotions, and wars accelerate these things. And the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution in August of 1964 was proved to be a patent falsehood, just as false as, you know, what Hitler pulled in Poland by having the radio station shot up. Remember that story?
Absolutely. But the point here, when you listen to a clip like that, how can you help but see the parallels with what we're doing in Iraq?
Well, exactly. They're the same thing. I mean, you know,
we've beggared another population.
One is in the war. One war is in the jungle, and the other is in the desert. And we literally raped Vietnam, as we are Iraq. And, you know, it was a war that we thought we could prosecute. And unfortunately for us, it was one of the greatest mistakes we ever made, and it nearly destroyed this country.
Well, you know,
how close we came.
When I heard, Jim, when I heard Dr. King mention how we destroyed their trees.
Well, with the oxen and all types of things. And,
yeah.
And look what it's done to us and
well,
the veterans of that war. I mean, you know, the residuals are horrible.
And again, comparing that to Iraq, I read an article not too awfully long back from a man who said, you know, we made our living by our orange groves, and the Americans came and bulldozed our trees.
Well, of course, you know, back initially, what they wanted to do was defoliate the entire country. And instead of using euphemistic the term of search and destroy, the directives went out sweep and clear, that type thing. But what we wanted to do was to destroy the canopies of their forests in which they were hiding. But these people would not be forsworn. And Ho Chi Minh, as I told you on a previous program, was a combination of Gandhi, Lenin, and Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And he defeated us. I mean, during the heights of that war, Lyndon Johnson offered to Ho Chi Minh, just before he initiated Rolling Thunder, and you can read this in the Pentagon paper, that he would stop the war, and he would bring all those assets that we had over there in country to help his country and put it back together, if only he would sit down at the table with us. And Ho Chi Minh said, no, I'm not going to do it. And hence began in 1965 Operation Rolling Thunder, which was a horrible and just shock and awe. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen napalm or if you've ever seen a plane fire napalm and see what it can do to an area. It's absolutely devastating.
And we're using it again.
And we're using it again. But, I mean, Ho Chi Minh was one man and with the will of his people. And these people, I mean, they defeated the French, they defeated us, and luckily Vietnam has healed somewhat, and at least we have normal relations. So out of that nettle of danger, we have plucked some flower of safety.
But you see, Jim, I'm skeptical of those so-called normal relations because I know what it means. What normal relations with Vietnam means is that Nike gets to go over there and set up tennis shoe shops where women breathe poisonous fumes all day, getting paid 50 cents a day to produce sneakers that are sold over here for $150 a pair.
I'm not. Does Nike have concessions there?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Well,
you know, that's the sad thing. Our definition in the 21st century, our definition of normalized relations is the ability for our corporations to go to a third world country and exploit the hell out of their people.
But, you know, that sword has two edges because look what it's doing back here at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, eventually that pendulum's going to have to swing back the other way because, I mean, you know, you can't have these corporations making all this money overseas and all this discontent at home because, I mean, what's going to happen eventually to the infrastructure of our own country? And basically, you know, this is pretty strong medicine that is going to basically, I think, kill the patient of the United, that I call the United States of America. I really do. And then, you know, and I'll end by saying, you know, there is a destiny that makes us brothers. No man goes his way alone. what we send into the lives of others returns into our own.
Well said, Jim. Thank you very much, and have a good evening.
You too.
Take care. Let's go back to Dr. King. Let's hear a little bit more of this. Because it is as trenchant today as it was then. And there is, you know, I don't hold myself in this class, and I don't hold most of the listeners to this program in this class, but there is a class of people who did learn nothing from Vietnam. George Bush learned nothing from Vietnam. Dick Cheney learned nothing from Vietnam. Don Rumsfeld learned nothing from Vietnam because it never touched them. It was good for them. They made money out of Vietnam, and their buddies made money out of Vietnam, and you gotta understand that Iraq is an opportunity to make up. Buck. Have we forgotten the Carlyle Group? And how heavily the Bushes are invested in that? I haven't. Back to Dr. King.
What do they think as we test out our latest weapons on them? Just as the Germans tested out new medicine and new tortures in the concentration camps of Europe. Where are the roots of the independent Vietnam we claim to be building? Is it among these voiceless ones? We have destroyed their two most cherished institutions, the family and the village. We have destroyed their land and their crops. We have cooperated in the crushing of the nation's only non-communist revolutionary political force, the Unified Buddhist Church. We have supported the enemies of the peasants of Saigon. We have corrupted their women and children and killed their men. Now that is little left to build on save bitterness.
And bitterness is a damned poor foundation. And that foundation is poured again in Iraq, isn't it? Same crap, different day. And we haven't gotten there yet. We're the middle class and the lower class, and damn it, we gotta go to work. And if you knock off work to go to a peace rally in D.C., you're gonna come back and you don't have a job. In the early days of the labor movement, And it still exists to a certain extent today, but in the early days of the labor movement, the examples are rife here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, when the coal miners struck, there was a little money built up in the union, and they would feed each other, and house each other, and clothe each other. Do we have some sort of an infrastructure today that will support a guy who loses his job driving a truck? Because he went to D.C. to demand that America be the America that was created and not the monstrosity that it has been transformed into? No, we don't. Should that happen? Yes, it should. There's lots of money out there banging around so that we can run issue ads against Scalito. Does George Soros have money to create a fund to take care of people who are willing to hit the streets to demand a change in America? Hasn't happened yet. It's directional. It's community. It's looking out for America. But, I don't know, is it going to happen? You got a buck to send to a fund? You got 10, you got 20? Everybody wants your money. You're working day in and day out. And send us $10 so we can maintain this television campaign. You know what? We don't need 30-second commercials if there's a million people in Washington, D.C. Feet on the street. But how do you make that happen? I don't know. I just don't know. Once again, Dr. King.
Before long, they must know that their government has sent them into a struggle among Vietnamese And the more sophisticated surely realize that we are on the side of the wealthy and the secure while we create a hell for the poor. Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as a child of God and brother to the suffering poor of Vietnam. I speak for those whose land is being laid waste, whose homes are being destroyed, whose culture is being subverted. I speak for the poor of America who are paying the double price of smashed hopes at home and death and corruption in Vietnam. I speak as a citizen of the world, for the world as it stands aghast at the path we have taken. I speak as one who loves America, to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours. This is the message of the great Buddhist leaders of Vietnam. Recently, one of them wrote these words, and I quote, "Each day the war goes on, the hatred increases in the heart of the Vietnamese and in the hearts of those of humanitarian instinct. The Americans are forcing even their friends into becoming their enemies. It is curious that the Americans, who calculate so carefully on the possibilities of military victory, do not realize that in the process they are incurring deep psychological and political defeat. The image of America will never again be the image of revolution, freedom, and democracy, but the image of violence and militarism," unquote.
We are unleashing a hell upon the poor. 100,000 poor, innocent Iraqi civilians are dead because of the hell we have unleashed on Iraq. I say again, enough of this God bless America foolishness. We'd best get busy with a whole bunch of God forgive America. "We must stop the war now," Dr. King said in 1967. You'll notice he didn't say anything about, well, you know, we need to pull out gradually. We need a gradual withdrawal. We can't just cut and run. It's not cutting and running. When you are doing something evil and you realize it is evil, you damned well stop doing evil right then and right there. And for these appeasement Democrats who look at the Republicans and say, well, yes, you're right. We need to, you know, it needs to happen slowly. Senator Clinton, it doesn't need to happen slowly. It needs to happen now. Senator Lieberman, it needs to happen now. When you are doing evil and you realize you are doing evil, you stop doing evil if you do not wish to be evil. I don't know why that's so damned hard to figure out. Maybe I'll figure out why in the break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Johnny Rotten saw the Who back in '69. State Radio. Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member. Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay, he was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, get a backbone, for God's sake. Stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Down the highway.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Where does the time go? I guess where the candle flame goes when you blow it out. But we do have a little less than an hour to chat for the remainder of the program. Your thoughts are, well, you know, your thoughts are why the show exists. I can babble away, but if you've got something you want to get off your chest or a thought that you want to share with regard to the news of the day, Dr. King, whatever, you know, hell, jump on in. 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333, and email is bob@headonradio.com. Now, I want to share, you know, again, the time goes by so fast. I want to share a little bit of what Al Gore was talking about today. This was a jeremiad today. This was an indictment top to bottom of the entire Bush administration and the Bush corporatist approach to destroying America. Well, you know, we've talked a lot in the last couple of weeks about Sammy Bad Breath, Scalito, and Gore, you know, didn't pull any punches. He addressed the issues of the judicial appointments.
The president's judicial appointments are clearly designed to ensure the courts will not serve as an effective check on executive power, as we have all learn. Judge Alito is a longtime supporter of a powerful executive, a supporter of that so-called unitary executive. Whether you support his confirmation or not, and I respect the fact that some of the co-sponsors of this event do, I do not. But whatever your view, we must all agree.
Neither did the attendees to the event.
That he will not vote as an effective check on the expansion of executive power. Likewise, Chief Justice Roberts has made plain his deference to the expansion of executive power through his support of judicial deference.
No president should ever have a Supreme Court that is a rubber stamp for unchecked, unmitigated, bloodthirsty wielding of absolute power. Those checks and balances are real. The Federalist Papers are real. You can read them. It's there, you know, Madison and Hamilton going back and forth, hammer and tongs, about what this government should look like and how we can best protect it. And this was a primary concern of theirs, how they could best protect it against ever devolving into tyranny. And yet, no, despite the fact that those men were geniuses, still, some Bushes who have never met genius that they didn't want to destroy, who have never seen any form of government that regards, you know, the unmoneyed that they didn't want to put down, found a way to destroy the dreams of brilliant men. You know, but not just the judicial appointments. You know, it was about the secrecy, too.
The constricted role of ideas in the American political system today has encouraged efforts by the executive branch to believe it can and should control the flow of information as a means of controlling the outcome of important decisions that still lie in the hands of the people. The administration vigorously asserts its power to maintain secrecy in its operations. After all, if the other branches don't know what's happening, they can't be a check or a balance.
Yeah, well, hell, we just won't tell them. This guy was a heartbeat away from the presidency. You'd think that if anybody was crazy for power, it would be him. But he's not. He wants the American government as the American government was set out to be. Yes, dear?
I heard on C-SPAN today that it was a certainty that Alito would be appointed.
know that he would be confirmed?
Or, yes, be confirmed. And, you know, it's kind of like a card game. When somebody tells you that they know they're going to win, you know there's a cheat.
Oh, yeah, the fix is in. This is a boat race, honey.
Exactly. And how they were going to look into the Republicans' parties and go through everyone to make sure that there's no hint of scandal, guys. They're already there. They've already been scandalized. They tried to cover it up like a kitty covers poo up.
Ew.
Well, I mean, if it stinks, you know, that's what it is.
Oh, it stinks in Washington. And Gore talked about that today. He said, Democrat or Republican, if you don't think that you have a job as a co-equal to the executive, you don't have any business here. It was inspiring. Let's go back to a little bit more of Vice President Gore.
If the pattern of practice begun by this administration is not challenged, it may well become a permanent part of the American system. That is why many conservatives have pointed out that granting unchecked power to this president means that the next will have unchecked power as well. And the next may be someone whose values and beliefs you do not trust. And that
Hillary.
Is why Republicans as well as Democrats should be concerned with what this president has done.
Of course, I said that, what, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago? I'm getting the idea that Al Gore is getting the idea. These appeasement Democrats, these go-along, get-along Democrats, these, yeah, well, you know, we should have a, we should, you know, we've got to make sure that the, you know, when the Iraqis can stand up, we will stand down. Those aren't Democrats. I don't know what the hell they are. Yes, I do. Quislings. They are Vichy Democrats. These are people who have as much to lose in the power elite structure as the Bush family does if this house of cards all comes tumbling down. Gore had some shots today. He even went so far as to call for a special prosecutor for Bush.
Republican as well as Democratic members of Congress should support the bipartisan call of the Liberty Coalition for the appointment of this special counsel to pursue the criminal issues raised by the warrantless wiretapping of Americans by the president. And it should be a political issue in any race, regardless of party, section of the country, House of Congress, or anyone who opposes the appointment of a special counsel under these dangerous circumstances when our Constitution is at risk.
The Constitution is at risk. Thanks, Al. We appreciate that. This is a time of great change. We may not have time to notice it. You know, gotta go to work. Gotta get the kids at soccer practice, basketball practice. You know, go grocery shopping, fix the dinner. You know, wind the cat, put out the clock.
Sorry, I do all that, and I still take time to notice.
Well, yes, and most of the people who listen to this program are that way, too. But that does not speak to most of America. You know, I don't think I cut it out as a soundbite, dear, but Vice President Gore was, you know, he was hard on the executive. He was hard on Congress. He was hard on the judiciary. He was hard on the media. And he was hard on the American people. This was no spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. There wasn't any sugar. He pointed out the fact very clearly that the American people, that well-informed electorate that he referenced Thomas Jefferson over, they're dropping the ball, too, because we are not a well-informed electorate. As long as we get to watch a Swift boat ad, well, we think we've got the world by the horns, and we're going to... Do you see what I mean, dear?
I see what you mean, but complacency, and I think a lot of people become almost destitute over the election being taken the first time when the Supreme Court appointed Bush rather than the people appointing who they wanted. But that's still no excuse. You have to get up. You have to fight for it.
Yeah, but look, Friday night we had a gentleman on, a conservative, who said, you know, George Bush won 2 elections. No, he didn't. And yet there are a bunch of people out there that never even knew Florida was going on, sweetheart.
that side has to say that. They don't want to admit they made a mistake, no matter what. But you watch. When things go bad, they'll be the first ones moaning. We'll just be kind of sitting back on, yeah, well, we knew it was coming. It's not that we told you so. We just knew it was coming. We might be a little better prepared. They won't.
Let's hear a little bit more.
It is therefore vital in our current circumstances that immediate steps be taken to safeguard our Constitution against the present danger posed by the intrusive overreaching on the part of the executive branch and the president's apparent belief that he need not live under the rule of law. I endorse the words of Bob Barr when he said, and I quote, "The president has dared the American people to do something about it for the sake of the Constitution. I hope they will."
That was a hell of a crowd he was talking to. And yeah, that, you know, the American people have been handed, why are we surprised? The American people have been handed a bring 'em on, just like he said, you know, that told the terrorists, you know, bring 'em on, kill some more of our American soldiers. That's what he said. You know, I authorized this spying program, and I do it again tomorrow, and I'm going to keep on doing it. That is George Bush looking at the American people and giving us his middle finger in all its glory, thumbing his nose at us and telling you going to stop me? You going to stop me? You can't stop me. Can we stop him? No, I'm not talking about anything violent. It's not my way. You know, and you've got Congressman Arlen Specter. Yesterday on one of the Sunday talk shows, said that impeachment was a remedy, but, you know, there's just not a lot of interest in that. God, I remember when there was all kinds of interest in impeachment in the Congress when a sitting president had consensual sex. But we've got a president that starts wars on phony intelligence. We've got a president who lies about the reasons to go to war. We've got a president who spies on the American people. And there's just not much interest in impeachment right now. But there is. The polling data is out there. A majority of the American people now know that George Bush must be removed from office. Remember, Arlen Specter voted for impeachment. When it was tried in the Senate, Arlen Specter voted for impeachment. But he doesn't think there's much interest in it now. You know what? I'm not one to tell you what to do, but I'm going to tell you what to do. John Conyers' impeachment legislation is in the House of Representatives. I think it's got 8 co-sponsors right now. Let me start this. I don't know why my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, I don't know why he has not co-sponsored this bill. I don't know why Alan Mollahan in the 1st Congressional District of West Virginia has not co-sponsored this bill. I don't know why every Democrat in the House of Representatives has not sponsored this bill. Do you have one of those Congress critters that hasn't? Won't take you long to go to their email site and let them know that they damned well better if they want to keep drawing that $100,000 a year plus salary in the best health care on earth. Do it. Do it. It's not going to do you any harm. Look, they already, the Bush administration already knows where you stand on this. Your congressman might not. The Bush administration listens to your damn phone calls, and if you say bomb, Agent Fred goes running into the next room because he thinks that the Arab terrorists are so damn stupid that they just have open conversations about what they plan to do. What a bunch of boobs. Let's go to the phones. Peter is with us. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to talk to the best
progressive radio guy in the whole country.
God bless you. Wait, what show? Did you mean to be calling somebody else?
No, I've got the Agnes and Bob show, and that's exactly what I wanted. Bob, I was calling to tell you about something that came in my email box today. It's from the frame shop is open. A fellow named Fieldman does this site, and for anyone who doesn't know about it, it's www.frameshopisopen.com. Anyway, this site is entirely devoted to framing arguments and how to take those arguments back. But in today's alert from him, he points out that in the past 24 hours that Samuel Alito and President Bush have both been using the same political talking point.
Really?
Yes, really. It is very interesting. And the talking point is that criticism of the president during war is irresponsible. And, you know, it's a simultaneous talking point by both men within a 24-hour period. And it suggests that Alito and Bush are already, before the jackass is installed, working together to achieve, you know, their agenda and their common political goal.
Well, I had it, I guess it was at Daily Kos last week. This principle that Bush is prepared to begin punishing people as disruptors for speaking ill of him.
Yes. This is exactly the line that this follows, and it's the same sort of talking point thing that went down with the Swift boat veterans and when they smeared Kerry. And the quote from Bush today, he was talking to who was it? A group of I forget exactly where he was talking, but anyway, in it he was saying, when our soldiers hear politicians in Washington question the mission they're risking their lives to accomplish, it hurts their morals, blah blah blah, or morale rather.
How would he ever know? He never served with any soldiers under those circumstances. He knows nothing about that.
Knows
Peter.
Nothing about it. Pure talking point, blah blah blah. And in the speech he used the word responsible and variations on it, you know, a bunch of times in the speech. And went on to say it's irresponsible because it hurts the troops, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's interesting that Alito did pull the same thing in his opening statement to the judiciary. He was going on about how Alito, you know, he referenced people behaving irresponsibly. And, you know, when he was talking about the protesters for Vietnam and irresponsible college students The larger question is, why is Alito already involved in a typical White House coordinated cover-up public relations? They're so in bed together. It is so freaking obvious. They've even got the same damn scripts at this point in time.
Well, they absolutely do. And remember, those concerned alumni of Princeton that Alito can't remember being a member of, even though he was so proud to be a member of it back in 1985. You know, you're absolutely right, Peter. He referenced those irresponsible people on campus. You know, the people protesting the war. Can you imagine on this January 16th, 2006, when we're talking about Dr. King, that in Samuel Alito's world, Dr. King was one of those irresponsible people?
Oh my God, that's exactly what this means, Bob. That's exactly what this means. You have hit the nail on the head. He was another one, and the man is a great hero. And, you know, in this article, the summary statement really is that a man who will say what he's told to by the president of the United States is unfit for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. That's exactly what he's doing. But nobody will stand up and do anything about it. It just amazes me how spineless we've become in the House and the Senate. Yeah. Bad news.
Well, and you know, we got the Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job comment out of the president with regard to Alito, too.
Yeah, he did that to
you brought some
else.
Real class to those hearings.
Yeah. He said that about a woman, too, recently. There was a woman in the news where somebody, you're doing a heck of a job, and there was a comment as to whether or not that was the kiss of death for her. I can't remember the
detail. But, you know, he thinks everybody's doing a heck of a job because they're insulating him from the public that despises him.
It's amazing. The man is in a rubber room with soundproof material, an anechoic chamber, and he has no clue.
Nothing.
His best punishment would be to lock him in a cell and force him to listen to every archive of Bob Kincaid and every other.
I got a better idea. Let's lock him in a rubber room with his mama.
Oh, that'd be good. Oh, that'd be
I can't
good.
Believe you screwed up so bad. You know, you've been a screw-up all your life. You know, when your sister died, we were kind of hoping it was going to be you instead of her because she would have been something good. You're just trouble.
Dude, I'd order that on pay-per-view any day.
Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you. I love you guys, and I'll see you soon.
All right, you have a great evening.
Bye.
Take care. And, yes, dear? Now, see...
Much thanks to Peter, too, because he is one of our computer gods.
He is our computer genius. And we do appreciate that, because I am a not-computer genius. Well, let's get one more clip in from Dr. King before we go to the break. Dead air, dead air, dead air, dead air.
We must continue to raise our voices and our lives. If our nation persists in its perverse ways in Vietnam, we must be prepared to match actions with words by seeking out every creative method of protest possible.
Pretty simple, isn't it? All you got to do is take out Vietnam and exchange it with the word Iraq. As long as we have his words, he is not dead. He just told us what to do. Do you think that his opinion would change because the part of the world where we were committing these atrocities changed? Be creative and be persistent. It is time for our break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Death. Won't you spare me over till another year? Well, what is this that I can't see with ice cold hands taking hold of me? Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell. Oh, death, someone would pray, could you wait to call me another day? The children prayed, the preacher preached, time and mercy is out of your reach.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray.
Welcome back.
Studying about that.
Okay, so 29 minutes left in the show tonight. Quick email from our friends Phyllis and Johns in Costa Rica. They say, we're enjoying your coverage of and commentary on Gore's speech. Do you know if there is somewhere on the web to download or stream the entire speech? I have a transcript, but I want my daughter to hear it if possible. Yeah. In fact, I do know a place. If you will go to The Truth Is, thetruthis.us/audio. You can listen to the complete audio of Vice President Gore's speech, and you will be amazed. http://thetruthis.us/audio. And that's our friend Bruce Birch. He set that up so that folks could have easier access to it. I tried to do it a couple of times at the cspan.org website, but apparently they got hammered. But I know for a fact that this link works. thetruthis.us/audio. So best of luck. And you know, not just for our friends Phyllis and Johns in Costa Rica, but for anybody, go and listen to it again. Burn it to a CD if you can. This is rousing stuff, and one of the best parts of that speech, at the end, after this long excoriation, and you know, I saw where some wingnuts were saying, he just talks forever, he won't shut up, he's boring. No kidding, yeah, I saw it, and that's the way they respond. You know, the Republican right has been trained into a soundbite mentality. It's sort of a my pet goat approach to politics. If it takes more than 15 seconds to say it, they can't comprehend it. And so if a man gives a speech of more, you know, they're so accustomed to dear leaders standing up and falling all over his tongue and fumbling and having his eyes roll around and shrug while he's waiting for the next piece of drivel to land in his brain from inside from the earpiece transmitter, that they can't comprehend that serious policy and serious discussion of the actual future of this nation sometimes takes a little bit more than, I'm George W. Bush and I approve this ad. And Gore touched on that in the speech too. But at the end of all of this, he did what he and Bill Clinton were so good at. He presented the job to be done. But then, having done that, he offered hope. He offered hope.
As I stand here today, I am filled with optimism that America is on the eve of a golden age in which the vitality of our democracy will be reestablished by the people and will flourish more vibrantly than ever. Indeed, I can feel it in this hall. As Dr. King once said, perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is, let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance, for we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close around us. Thank you very much.
I told you would hear Dr. King's words again. I told you. That is I'd like to honest to God know whether or not he intends to run. I'm sure he's trying to keep his powder dry, because the same crowd that will go out and shoot watermelons in the backyard to try to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster will, you know, start ginning up the, you know, you remember the Buddhist temple? You remember he invented the internet? Maybe the time has come that the American people can look at those damned fools, those poor benighted fools, and say, it doesn't work anymore. We're not going to tolerate it anymore. You talk about issues, but this sleazy redefinition of politics as some sort of blood sport that is done, for your corporate masters while they rip you off. No, we're not going to sit still for that anymore. Let's go to the phones. Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, you're head on.
Good evening.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
Yeah, sound like you got a real good pointed program going.
Well, we try.
And I tell you, you don't take a whole lot of effort to get something going on the people that is in the high offices, does it?
No.
But I had a comment on Gore for the first time. I never have liked him much because he was all laid back and country gentleman type. But this is one of the most fiery speeches that I've ever heard him do, and I'm really impressed with it. And as far as some of these other jerks like Orrin Hatch, I don't know if you know anything about Orrin Hatch or not.
More than I care to.
But I go way back. We had a run-in with him back in the 70s. And he is another Clint Lott and the whole mess mixed together. He is just a filthy person. And I just wanted to shed some light on the people that probably don't know him, because his name has come to light more in the last 6 months than it ever has.
Mm-hmm.
But he is definitely a right winger.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, he was the one who sleazed Anita Hill back in the Clarence Thomas hearings.
Mm-hmm. But he's no good, and he'd suck a horse's butt for a morning glory. He's a Bush special. And I just want to make a comment on that and compliment you on the good job you've done on that program in using Martin Luther King, and say that, you know, to show you how the media and the propagandist that this idiot's on television now, Bush, propagandist, can get you into thinking that people that are really good and got a real purpose in life can be put down to the point he was. They even had a lot of the, you know, that you don't know where it starts, but somewhere it starts always that they're communists.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what got back to us. And, of course, I was a true veteran then, and like most of them are now. You want to believe in your doctor and you want to believe in your president, but you don't want to put that much stock in it. I can tell the whole world now that they better use their own common sense on approaches used to both parties, the president and your doctor, because they don't always have your best interest of heart, depending on what they want to do that day. But anyway, I just wanted to comment on that and say,
well, we appreciate it.
We need to take a look at people that seem to be doing good, because most of the time they are, especially in Dr. King's category. And there's a lot of good Democrats out there yet, but they're not Hillary Clinton and people like that. They are not for us.
No, and that's one of the things about Al Gore. Now, maybe there's some Hillary folks listening. I'm sorry. I don't think she's the one to lead us in 08. And Al Gore could very well do what we need done in 08 and put some of this Hillary business. Well, you know, heck, if he wanted to nominate her as his vice president, fine by me. But
not
this
for me. I mean,
but as long as she's not president, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, but as I'm afraid that the potential might be there for her to be that, and to see what the position she already takes on the war on, and on the killing of our boys. I don't want any chance for something like that to surface. I wouldn't vote for her for nothing. So.
Well, but the sad fact is, Ed, maybe not a sad fact. If she's nominated, if she does happen to receive the Democratic nominee for the presidency, I'm going to be in a terrible pickle, because there's going to be a Republican running against her, and I know that that Republican is going to be no good for America.
Yeah. Well, it ain't going to be Condoleezza Rice, because she confirmed further today, tonight, that she was not, that was, she had other goals other than that, that wasn't even in the picture.
Yeah, that's another story I've got here in front of me that I haven't even touched yet, Ed. She came out after it became clear that the president's missile strike on Pakistan, you know, we bombed a sovereign nation we're not at war with. After that, turned out that we didn't get Ayman al-Zawahiri, but instead we slaughtered 17 innocent civilians. She came out and said she'd gladly do it again.
You know what? They're out of touch. They're out of touch with reality. They're out of touch with human life. They're out of touch with compassion and understanding of other people. See, it ain't her daughter. It ain't their sons, or it ain't their grandparents. So it don't matter. They've never seen those people.
Right, and I'm so sick of seeing Condi Rice held up as an example of the success of Martin Luther King. Can you?
You know,
I know, Ed.
Yeah, they could put them back to back. That's how far apart they are. They're not even pointed in the right, in the same direction.
Well, she's a killer. She's just another multi-millionaire killer like her boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anybody, you know, they say birds of a feather flock together. If you see them kind of people together, and you know one of them's a horse's butt, you can figure the other one stinks, too.
That's about the size of it. Ed, awful good to hear from you.
Well, I'm just real glad to see that the program, you know, I guess maybe because I'm associated with a lot of the events from out of the Martin Luther King area, that it's just really good to have them run by you again, and you did such a good job at it.
Well, you know, Ed, one of the things that needs to be borne out and remembered on this day as well is that, again, the white power elite in this country has desperately tried to ghettoize and pigeonhole Martin Luther King. But the one thing we have to remember, when he was murdered in Memphis, he wasn't there on a race relations issue. He was there on an organized labor issue.
Yeah, he was there to help unionize the garbage or sanitation workers.
Exactly.
I remember the case, and I remember that his killing, even though I didn't understand all that was going on with him then, It still felt like I got kicked in the shins real good, and I didn't know why. But I guess some of the good stuff that was said had then rubbed off on me and got in my system, so to speak. But those kind of people, like Jim talked, a lot of people in that time period got devastated by the leaders that was damaged and mm-hmm. so forth. And if they could have survived, it definitely would have been a contribute to society today, I think.
Oh, there's no doubt this would have been a different world. You know, people forget, Ed, that do you remember? I mean, you were there for it. Do you remember what the margin of victory of Richard Nixon over Hubert Humphrey was?
I don't remember exactly.
It was less than 1%.
Yeah, I know it was super close. I don't think there's ever been one that close, has there?
Not up until Bush versus Gore.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is, Bobby Kennedy would have beaten Richard Nixon like a borrowed mule.
Yeah, that was evident. And that's the reason a lot of the stuff that happened. That's for sure, to take it out of the picture.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for everything, Ed. You have yourself a great evening. I hope we'll hear from you again soon, okay?
You will, and I appreciate your program, Bob.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on board. You take care now.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Ed. Ed has walked the walk. Ed has talked the talk. Ed has fought the fight. Ed's one of those older gentlemen, older Americans, whom it would do well a bunch of younger Americans to listen very carefully and very patiently and very, very, very acutely to. Because folks like Ed, it's not just walk the walk and talk the talk. Ed's, you know, Ed and our other organized labor guys from the older generation, they've also bled the blood. And you know what? They didn't bleed it for themselves. They didn't go into that fight for themselves. They were worrying about my generation the way that I'm worrying about my children's. Our children's, Agnes, I'm sorry. And we'd better worry. But the worrying had best be productive. We're running out of time rather quickly. Let's go back to Dr. King. I want you to hear all of these, and we've got several minutes left.
The war in Vietnam is but a symptom of a far deeper malady within the American spirit. And if we ignore this sobering reality, we will find ourselves organizing clergy and laymen concern committees for the next generation. They will be concerned about Guatemala and Peru. They will be concerned about Thailand and Cambodia. They will be concerned about Mozambique and South Africa. We will be marching for these and a dozen other names and attending rallies without end unless there is a significant and profound change in American life and policy. Though such thoughts take us beyond Vietnam, but not beyond our calling as sons of the living God.
Let's just roll a couple more.
This need to maintain social stability for our investments accounts for the counter-revolutionary action of American forces in Guatemala. It tells why American helicopters are being used against guerrillas in Cambodia and why American napalm and green beret forces have already been active against rebels in Peru. It is with such activity in mind that the words of the late John F. Kennedy come back to haunt us. 5 years ago, he said, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." Increasingly, by choice or by accident, this is the role our nation has taken. The role of those who make peaceful revolution impossible by refusing to give up the privileges and the pleasures that come from the immense profits of overseas investments. I am convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered.
Back that up just a hair, dear. That's worth hearing again. To about right there. Just takes a second.
When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered.
My God. Nothing's changed. It's just it's not even a new crop of thugs. It's the same thugs that were a thorn in the side of Martin Luther King Jr., and they are tormenting us to this very day.
Come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of South America and say this is not just.
You know, the people who
Western
who
arrogance
to
of
this
feeling
day.
That it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hand on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death.
Talking about military-industrial complexes getting more money than social programs will get you killed in America.
Our only hope today lies in our ability to recapture the revolutionary spirit and go out into a sometimes hostile world declaring eternal hostility to poverty, racism, and militarism. With this powerful commitment, we shall boldly challenge the status quo and unjust mores, and thereby speed the day when every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain.
Everybody with tears in their eyes, raise your hand.
This call for worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation is in reality a call for an all-embracing and unconditional love for all mankind.
Pay attention.
This oft misinterpreted concept so readily dismissed by the Nietzsches of the world as a weak and cowardly force has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of man. When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of some sentimental and weak response.
Tell it.
I'm not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality. Let us love one another. For love is God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us.
And they killed him. They killed him. They murdered him.
We are now faced with the fact, my friends, that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, that is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with a lost opportunity. The tide in the affairs of men does not remain at flood, it ebbs. We may cry out desperately for time to pause in her passage, but time is adamant to every plea and rushes on. Over the bleached bones and jumble residues of numerous civilizations are written the pathetic words, too late. That is an invisible book of life that faithfully records our vigilance or our neglect. Omar Khayyam is right, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on. We still have a choice today. Nonviolent coexistence, a violent co-annihilation.
We may run a little bit long tonight, but I think in this case it's worth it.
If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time, reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight.
As long as these words exist, he exists.
Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. This is the calling of the sons of God, and our brothers wait eagerly for our response. Shall we say the odds are too great? Shall we tell them the struggle is too hard? Will our message be that the forces of American life militate against their rival as full men, and we send our deepest regrets? Or will there be another message?